This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 295 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
David's back. Yay. Yay, David.
Thanks to all of our listeners that were patient with me. It's been a long July, but I'm better, slowly getting back to normalcy, and podcasts and good thoughts are always a good way to get back in the swing of things. And I heard an earful from Max that I was, he doesn't like doing the show alone. So here I am, I'm back. So I guess, Max, now that that's over, we probably should get to some news. What do you think?
Let's talk some news, David. First one is kind of more of an announcement than news, actually. As everyone probably knows, early in June, the 2019 FAA UAS Symposium was held in Baltimore, Maryland. Well, now the proceedings from that event are available, and they're on the FAA.gov website. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's kind of a little bit too long to read out loud. Some of it is just PDFs of the presentations, and some of it is actual videos of some sessions and presentations. So if you didn't attend, this would be a great way to really seriously get caught up on some of the topics that may be of interest to you. And if you did attend, like I did, this is an opportunity to see some of the sessions that you missed. So again, we'll have that link in the show notes for this episode at the uavdigest.com/295. So check those out. All right, with that, David, our first story, designing custom hybrid drones. This comes from csail.mit.edu. What's csail? That's the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab. And here, David, hybrid drones has a little bit of a different meaning. Usually in aviation, when we talk about hybrid aircraft, like hybrid electric aircraft, you're talking about something that has a fossil fuel-powered engine and an electric motor. Usually hybrid refers to power sources. But that's not what it means here, David.
No, this is that design that we've talked about a lot over the last couple of years, where it's a combination multi-copter and fixed-wing aircraft. So you get the vertical takeoff and landing of a multi-rotor and the fixed-wing speed and agility. This is primarily, I think, MIT is targeting this, right? This is the future of package delivery. You mean the ability to take off and land vertically is important to deliver and start off the process. But the speed, the distance, and the ability to lift heavy loads and do it quickly and efficiently is better done with a fixed wing. So this is the kind of target they're looking for.
And what MIT is saying is that when you have two, I'll call them modes of flight like this, that there are usually two control systems involved, one for the vertical flight and one for the horizontal flight. And having to develop two control systems for one aircraft is not only is it difficult and usually has to be done manually, but each design has its own control systems. So CSAIL, this computer science and artificial intelligence lab, have developed a system for designing the control systems for aircraft like this. And they use a neural network to design the controller. And what happens is the software runs many, many simulations to continually improve the design of the control system. And with this software that they've developed, you don't have to be an expert in order to design the control system for a vehicle like that. So you start off with a drone design using commercial software, and then this neural network runs these simulations and presents you with a control system within a few hours, which I think that's pretty amazing, David.
Yeah, considering the complexity of these kind of aircraft, I think of the trials and tribulations of the V-22, which would fall just into this category. It's a vertical takeoff and landing, and then a fixed-wing forward-flying aircraft. And that uses one control set, but there's computer logic that says when you're transitioning from vertical flight to horizontal flight, the computers automatically adjust what you're using for the flying surfaces and the controlling. So interesting. Neural networks, it's kind of a bit creepy. I mean, it sounds a little bit too much like Skynet, but good for MIT. I wonder what if they're going to make this open source so that it's good for everybody, or someone's going to pick this off and make it their own. Hopefully they keep it open source so there can be more than one group of individuals accessing it.
They have a video showing one of these kinds of drones flying. And one thing you'll notice right away is that I think, David, when I've thought about drones that are capable of this horizontal, this dual mode kind of flight, you think of one or the other with, like you say, a transition in between. But this drone that they show in the video seems to be using both the fixed wing and the vertical capabilities at the same time and alternating and blending them together. So it's quite interesting. Take a look at this video in the show notes. It's pretty cool stuff. Now they say that there's some future work that is planned. They want to increase the maneuverability of the drone by improving the design, and they also note that the model that they've built here it doesn't fully take into account complex aerodynamic effects between the propeller's airflow and wings. So they want to work on that. And they also trained this copter, of course, with neural network. That involves machine learning, training it. But it was trained with the yaw velocity set at zero, they say, which means it can't currently perform sharp turns. So that's something they want to work on as well. So this is exciting work. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, if you think about it, helicopters turn very differently than fixed wings. So given that conversation, it sounds like the aircraft is not capable of banking yet, which would make it, it sounds like it side slips like a good old radio controlled aircraft when you only have a rudder and a tail in the back. You know, you don't have any bank. You just sort of side slip around. So good for MIT. We'll have to keep following up on this and see what's next. But speaking of drone delivery, this is from pressroom.ups.com. UPS forms subsidiary and applies for FAA certification to operate drone delivery unit. UPS has filed for Part 135 certification. So, we've been talking about drone delivery, but it seems to keep going.
And UPS, United Parcel Service, really wants to be part of this for, I think, obvious reasons. And along with this request for certification under Part 135, UPS has also created a subsidiary an incorporated subsidiary called UPS Flight Forward. And they hope that they'll receive their Part 135 certificate before the end of this year. And with that kind of a certification, that would allow them to conduct flight operations beyond line of sight at night and with an unlimited number of drones and operators in command. So again, UPS really wants to be solidly in this game, and this is the action they're taking. Of course, we've seen UPS do some other things, particularly with Matternet, David, operating some deliveries of medical supplies.
Yeah, the Matternet has a Part 107, and we've talked about them, as well as a Part 135 in North Carolina, and they've been delivering medical supplies as part of the FAA pilot program. So they already have the experience, and UPS is leveraging that as a partner. So good for Matternet to getting that aboard, and UPS, it's interesting that its medication is going to be the first. I really seriously think medication will be the first real prospect for drone delivery. We've seen it all over the world now, Africa, North Carolina, Australia, but I think this is really the locked on where to start for drone delivery. And I could have used it about a month ago.
And it's also, I think, a good product, if you will, to kick off drone deliveries, because who's going to argue with it? I mean, if drones start buzzing overhead carrying hamburgers and pizzas and things like that, that could cause people to have a different reaction or to be annoyed maybe to a different level than if it's medical supplies. So I think from that standpoint, I don't know if that's intentional or not. I don't know if maybe that's overanalyzing or overthinking what some of these companies may be trying to do. But I would say that, if you're going to do something completely new, like deliveries by drone, and you want to minimize the negative aspect that some people may have, the negative perceptions that some people may have, then carry a product that has recognized importance. And maybe that's what's happening here.
Well, I've said in the past that it's ideal. You need it for speed.
Yeah.
Most of the medications are not heavy. They're not bulky. So that kind of is an advantage for what we don't have yet. We don't have long battery lives and long distance aircraft. But medications, that need to be rushed is a really good way to handle it by drone. So it's a hell of a lot cheaper than a ambulance and or a medevac helicopter.
For sure.
Well, our next story is from FAA.gov. FAA to further expand opportunities for safe drone operations. On July 23rd, the FAA expanded the Low Altitude Authorization and Capability, or LAANCE, system to include recreational flyers.
Yeah, the FAA says that this, quote, will significantly increase the ability of drone pilots to gain access to controlled airspace nationwide. Of course, LAANCE, we've talked about many times. It expedites the time. It makes it much quicker for a drone pilot to receive authorization to fly under 400 feet in controlled airspace. So opening this up to recreational flyers, I think, is a good move. It's also maybe, David, in some ways kind of a prerequisite or at least it helps lay a foundation for a different viewpoint where recreational flyers are maybe not viewed as differently or maybe not as exempted from unmanned aircraft regulations as has been the case in the past.
Yeah, it brings that group of individuals into the fold, I guess, is what you're trying to say, which is a good thing. If we're going to require registration, et cetera, at least they should also get the benefits of being able to fly in the NAS. Likewise, it also puts, excuse the pun, these recreational flyers on the radar so that they're not interfering with other deliveries, et cetera, going forward. So good thing, positive. And this week has been Oshkosh out in Wisconsin. And surprisingly, the amount of seminars the FAA has given on UASs has been really impressive, as much as working with general aviation and civil aviation. So the FAA is definitely focused on this, and it's, I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot more coming out about registration and everyone working together.
And if you want to learn more about Lance, of course, you can visit the FAA's website at www.faa.gov/go/Lance, and Lance is LAANC.
Well, okay, let's go from one nation's integration into the airspace to another. This is from AustralianPhotography.com, another magazine I wouldn't expect to find about drones, but Australian drone licenses scheme delayed. You know, it's a scheme. That's kind of a, that should tell you where this article is going to go. But the rollout of the Australian drone registration scheme has been delayed by the Civil Aviation Safety Authority of Australia, which is CASA.
Yeah, it looks like recreational users won't be registering their drones until sometime in 2020, maybe the last half of 2020. And CASA says they're going to be toughening up the drone safety rules. They said that commercial operators will be the first to register, then recreational. And I think that they are taking a a stronger approach towards policing the regulations in Australia. I think CASA wants to establish a nationwide registration database. They mentioned that they would be monitoring compliance, sometimes publicly, sometimes covertly, and if anyone is found illegally flying, that there could be a fine of around $1,000. Although I guess they haven't done that yet. So, I think that they are looking to police this to a greater degree, maybe than here in the U.S. Although maybe that's not necessarily the case. But you don't often find here the FAA talking about enforcement methods. The conversation seems to be all about creating the regulations. And here from CASA, we see at least overtly a stronger focus on policing the regulations.
Yeah, it's an interesting tone. But the registration for recreational users is supposed to be $20 Australian a year. So, you know, it's like everything else, you know, $20 is a hell of a lot better than $1,000. Recreational users are likely to start in mid to late 2020. So we have noticed, and I don't remember where I saw it on Twitter today, but recreational users for UASs are starting to go down. I think we've hit our peak of everyone going out at Christmas and getting a drone. I think that fad is done. So now it's up to... it's more commercial, et cetera. I don't know what Australia has for and maybe some of our Australian listeners, and we have a lot of them, could tell us what they have for model aircraft. Like we have the Academy of Model Aeronautics here. Is there some organization that would be supporting drones that would be against the registration? Kind of like the AMA was sort of challenging the FAA for a while here in the States. So if you have any of that information, Max and I are curious. So send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com, or better yet, send us a Slack request to that email, and we can have a conversation in our Slack listener teams. So shout out to all of our Australian listeners. Let's hear what they think about registration. Since we know that Canada and the FAA and CASA, they all sort of quietly pay attention to each other, that you discover that, you know, one does something and somebody else mirrors it or contradicts it, etc. So it's all one, we're all one big globe of UAS users. So what's our next story, Max?
This is from newatlas.com. Radio beacon guided drone has a nose for toxic gases. And this is about the SNAV, S-N-A-V, the smelling nano aerial vehicle. It's a teeny tiny drone, fits in the palm of your hand.
That's got a big nose.
But what it does have is metal oxide gas sensors on it. And this little guy can detect things like carbon monoxide, methane, as well as other organic volatile compounds, things like ethanol and acetone and benzene. And it's super sensitive, at least it sounds that way to me, down to one part per million in volume. And this is something that you could deploy in a disaster or an emergency where there may be toxic or gases that have been released that would make it difficult to send a person in there. This little thing can fly in and sniff around and identify if there's any gas there.
A 21st century canary in a coal mine?
Yes, exactly. And about the size, too. Maybe even a little bit smaller.
And if you don't know that reference, email me and I'll explain it to you. Since I know some of our listeners wouldn't be used to hearing a canary in a coal mine.
Right.
But the quadcopter they're using is a Crazy Flight 2.0 mini quadcopter. And we'll have a link to the show notes to BitCraze. It's got the Crazy Flight Crazy Fly online. BizCraze says version 2.1 of the little quad weighs 27 grams and designed as a developer platform. Or someone like me, so I can bang it off the walls of the apartment because I still don't know how to fly these things.
And this comes from, well, not the drone, but the addition of the sensors, the metal oxide gas sensors, comes from researchers at the University of Barcelona and the Institute for Bioengineering of Catalonia. And they took the Crazy Fly little mini quadcopter and they modified that. So, yeah, BitCraze I don't know a lot about them, but it is kind of interesting in that they, as they describe here, they like to set this up as a developer platform from which you can do or create lots of interesting things. Maybe it's kind of like the Raspberry Pi of tiny quadcopters, David.
Oh, boy. You know, if we could get a Raspberry Pi run by a fuel cell,
yeah,
you would be in heaven, and I would be crying.
You know, so this is a little tiny, teeny tiny drone that can fly into areas, get into places that might be difficult to access. But sometimes you need something that has either greater duration or has a heavier lift capability. So you need a larger drone, but that makes it less suitable for getting into tight little spaces. Although someone from UC Berkeley has a possible solution to that.
This is from spectrum.iee.org. Spring-loaded drone collapses mid-flight to zip through windows. This is good old swing the wings back as you fly through the window, then like a lot of science fiction shows do when they have to fly through doors or caverns or something. So it can shrink itself by 50% in less than half a second, which is really quick, and then spring load back. This is pretty a neat concept.
It's pretty clever. Each of the arms of this quadcopter has a flat metal spring. And so the arm's under tension. But when the motors are running, that counters the force of the spring, and so the arms stay extended. But as soon as you switch off the motors, the strength of the spring collapses the arms against the body, makes it a lot smaller, and then when you reapply power, boom, springs back to life. So there is a video of this. This is more than a concept. They've actually got something running, and you kind of have to see this. And there'll be a link in the show notes. It's kind of impressive, although this is not an autonomous device. So in the video, what you see is a small frame like a window, and this drone comes shooting towards it. The arms collapse. It passes through. The arms open up on the other side of the window, and then the drone recovers itself and flies on. Now, as I said, it's not autonomous. The current incarnation of this, the drone doesn't know the window is there. It's not detecting a window. That's something that maybe could come, although that sounds like a pretty difficult task, David, to detect the size and orientation of an opening. But as it is now, basically the thing is, being flung towards the window at the last moment. The power is cut, the arms collapse, and just based on the momentum of the drone, it carries it through the window. Then afterwards, the power is reapplied, the arms open up. For a fraction of a second, the drone sort of is trying to regain its composure, maybe you could say, and then continues on in stable flight. Really kind of a unique approach to, the issue of how do you get a big drone through a small opening.
Look for it on the next Mission Impossible sequel.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that's just definitely something that you're going to, somebody in some spy show will, or the next James Bond movie whenever they make it. So,
right.
Interesting technology. UC Berkeley is... it's funny, we've talked about both coasts now, MIT and Berkeley. So everybody's getting into the drone program. So I guess, Max, I hate to say this, but I'm getting tired. I'm not used to this podcasting thing.
All right, well, we'll wrap it up. I want to thank all of you for listening to episode 295 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Show notes for this episode, including all the articles and the videos that we mentioned, are at the uavdigest.com/295.
And of course, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. And you can send us a Slack request, like I mentioned earlier, or just an email to us to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And if you listen to iTunes, Stitcher, or Apple Play, or Google Play, Google Podcasts.
All of that stuff.
All of that stuff. Leave us some feedback so other people can find us so that we can still be one of the best UAV podcasts out there. And last but not least, if you want to purchase some swag, you can get us on the Cafe Press store. And all of those links are available on our homepage. Again, I'd like to thank everyone who reached out to me during my illness. I missed doing this, and I missed Max. And I'm looking forward to moving forward and having exciting news and stuff coming ahead of us. So thank you, Max, for holding up the fort while I was away. But I think we're back on track, and away we go. So this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.